Welcome to Health Connections, an exploration of people, health, and policy. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth. 52 years ago this summer, President Lyndon Johnson brought into being a program that would reshape health care options for the poor and disabled. Medicaid is either hailed as a step forward for low-income Americans or castigated as a handout program for the lazy, depending on one's political persuasion. Today on Health Connections, the realities of Medicaid in Tennessee. Joining me, as always, is Dr. Carol Myers of the University of Tennessee College of Nursing. Dr. Myers, good to talk to you.
Oh, great to talk with you, Brandon. Thank you for this opportunity.
Well, first, you and I both wanted to talk about the background of Medicaid, set up what all this is about. It's a program that is designed to bring insurance and access to health care to certain groups of people, and namely, the poor, as well as disabled people, expectant mothers, and children.
Yes, Medicaid is one of our classic entitlement programs. And basically, what an entitlement program means is that if you are eligible, according to one of the categories that are prescribed in the statutes, then you can have benefits. So there are eligibility categories, Brandon, as you outlined, women, children, and others. And over time, these categories have changed.
The program was created, as we said, at the federal level in 1965, but by design, it's managed by the states and it's paid for by both. Let's go into that in a little detail.
Yes, this is the salient feature about Medicaid, and it's different than other programs in this regard, in that the state manages the program, and the state actually has a lot of flexibility in how they manage the program, but the costs are borne jointly by the federal government and the state. In the case of Tennessee, our Medicaid replacement program, which we'll talk about shortly, about 65% of the costs are covered by the feds and 35% by the state.
We should point out, by the way, that ranks Tennessee about 17th in the country. We're toward the middle of the pack. Some states have much more of a federal stake in Medicaid. Some have much lower. So it fluctuates from state to state.
That's correct. And you're right. We're in the middle. Some states have as low as 50% cost sharing with the feds, and some have 70%, the more poorer states.
Medicaid, as we talked about a moment ago, is an entitlement program, and you gave us kind of an impression of what that is in terms of eligibility. It means if you meet a certain kind of criteria, you're in. I want to talk about what that means to some degree budgetarily. An entitlement program, Social Security is another example, means you don't necessarily have a fixed budget that the government, whether it's federal or state, gives you at the beginning of the budget year. Most departments work that way. The government decides, okay, we're going to give you $11 billion this year. Don't spend more than that. This is your allotment. This is your allowance for the fiscal year. Medicaid doesn't work that way. It costs as much as it costs, right?
That's correct. And that's one of the other salient features about entitlement programs. And the three classic ones are Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security, as you named. So if a person is eligible for the services must be paid for. And the other thing that's interesting, in the annual federal budget process, that recurring expenses have to be approved on a year-to-year basis. But expenses for entitlement programs are outside of that budgetary annual process. So it is sort of an open-ended, and that's why it's so important how the factors that determine the cost are managed and how they're initially described. And that varies by state. Each state's Medicaid program is different.
That gets us, of course, to the subject of our conversation. Now that we've set the table, I want to talk about TennCare. And that is essentially synonymous with Medicaid in Tennessee. But I heard you use the phrase Medicaid replacement program.
Mm-hmm.
What is a Medicaid replacement program? Is this what we're talking about today?
Exactly. So let's kind of set this up. It's always important to understand the context. So in the 1990s, when Clinton was in office, there was the failure, as we all know, of major health reform, the Health Security Act.
And that was a federal approach. That was the top-down kind of health care reform of the early 1990s.
Right. And okay. It was a major failure. And at that time, we were experiencing escalating health care costs. And it was a pinch that was being felt both at the federal level and the state level. So what happened as a result of that was the states became incubators for health reform. And what had preceded this was large employers had been in that game for many years in trying to manage their liability related to health care costs for their employees. So the state said, okay, we need to get in that game also. Also, if you remember, not only did we have the failure of national health reform during Clinton's administration, we also had the budgetary crisis. And really, just picture something. Think about the election of Newt Gingrich and the shutdown of the federal government. Mm-hmm. So we're dealing with a very, very serious problem, escalating federal budget, and a desire to do something about this. So these two things led to the Clinton administration introducing what we now call waiver programs. And basically what it said was they would remove obstacles to states from doing some experimentation, so to speak, within Medicaid. And they said they would not only allow waivers, they would escalate or accelerate the approval process. So waivers can be used in a lot of ways. They're mostly considered as a way to expand or broaden the population, but also services. The downside is waivers can also be used to constrict the program. Hmm. So here we are in Tennessee. So here's a bit of history. What's going on in Tennessee at the same time? There are two major factors that are going on in Tennessee against this federal backdrop. The first is that the Medicaid budget in Tennessee nearly tripled over the span of 6 years, and that was unsustainable. The other thing is that the state of Tennessee had a process by which they were funding uncompensated care, basically providing some relief to hospitals, and the federal government had said, can't do that anymore. What you're doing is not allowable. So from these two factors in Tennessee, escalating cost and losing the way to pay for uncompensated care, came the idea of TennCare. Governor Ned Ray McWhorter had a longstanding personal commitment to making health care available to more people. And with some architects of TennCare, Manny Martin, David Manning, Gordon Bonnieman, Tony Garr, the folks I call the architects of TennCare, went ahead and put together a waiver program.
It's interesting that this discussion began at the state level in part over costs of spiraling health care concerns, because about 10 years after TennCare launched, it started in 1994, about 10 years later, its expenses had risen dramatically. At that time, Governor Phil Bredesen and state lawmakers had to make some tough choices, and one of those was to cut costs by contracting the eligibility, by dropping some of the categories that had been part of TennCare initially. And I've read estimates of 170 to maybe 190,000 people lost their coverage, their Medicaid coverage through TennCare from that contraction. What happened that led to that?
Okay, I think we first need to understand what TennCare at the most basic level did. And first was it did allow for the expansion of the TennCare population. So new categories of people were added. These were uninsured individuals, as well as folks that had been denied because of pre-existing conditions, as well as people that were duly eligible for Medicare and Medicaid. So we had these new categories which allowed more people into the fold. The cost for that, the idea was, would be partially offset by the introduction of managed care. Other states had had some experience with using managed care and Medicaid. And remember, Medicaid is a special population. What Tennessee did was considered very bold at the time. The TennCare program, which became the sole Medicaid replacement program in the state, was fully managed care. It wasn't a managed care option embedded within the offerings. It was the only offering. So the idea was we can take more health care to more people by using managed care, and we could also make sure that the hospitals are protected from uncompensated cost.
And so then, of course, that led to the tough choices that I talked about just a moment ago.
Right. The bottom line is, I don't know if the TennCare experiment failed. What I do know is that the execution was extremely flawed. What do I mean by that? Well, first off, we did not have the infrastructure or the expertise in our state to run a full managed care replacement program. Also significantly, we did not have managed care companies come into our state that had experience either in managed care, remarkably, or with the population that was enrolled into the 10 Care program. So we got off to a very chaotic start. You know, we don't have the computer systems to manage the program. We have the entry and exit very rapidly of managed care companies in the states. We have problems with coverage. We have problems with the 10 Care directors, tremendous amount of turnover. So the implementation, which is the area where policy usually fails, was bad. So against this backdrop, healthcare costs, as they were doing across the country, continued to escalate and left Governor Bredesen with what he said was the only option, and that was to cut back on the expansion categories.
So here we are about a dozen years after those choices were made, after those expansion categories were dropped. How is 10 Care different today than it was pre-contraction?
Oh, 10 Care today is remarkably different than those early chaotic days, Brandon. And there's a lot of signs of this. One is that we do have stable, experienced, competent managed care organizations. So that makes a major difference. We also see a bringing back or integration of the management of care. I mean, managed care is not management just of cost. It's management of the care that's delivered early 10 Care days. That was very fragmented. And with that diffuse accountability, we got the results that we deserved, quite honestly. But now the management is very well integrated. I think one of the metrics that really say to me how far we've come is, as a nation, cost escalation within Medicaid is less than in the private sector. Within the Medicaid programs, 10 Care is one of the lower as far as growth. There's a lot of good things that are going on in 10 Care with keeping costs down, with doing innovative things to make sure that we're delivering high quality, cost-effective care that's acceptable to the beneficiaries, 95% approval rating, and do it in a way that's fiscally responsible. So I think the story of 10 Care 12, 15 years ago and 10 Care today are two very different chapters in the history.
This may not be something you could speak to directly, but I'm just curious. I'm reminded, of course, from my old political science classes about, I don't know if it was Robert Lafollette who said, you know, states are the laboratories of democracy, that sometimes we can try things at a state level and see if they're scalable. You know, there might be some inspiration to be had either in other states or federally. Is 10 Care scalable? Would Kansas, would Nebraska, would Vermont be able to do what we're doing here in Tennessee? Or is this something that it just, your mileage may vary depending on what state you're in?
Yeah. First off, Brandon, let me say that if you were a student in my class and you prefaced your question that way, I would probably jump for joy. So thanks for the question. Yes, I do think that the changes that we're seeing in 10 Care, the way that 10 Care is run today, that it is scalable, it's sustainable, and I think it does support the idea that the states are incubators of reform. So when I look at, sometimes things seem a little dark right now as we're in this chaotic time of the role of the states and the role of the federal government and obviously some desire for some major changes, is that I think that we can generate good innovation within the states. I think the thing that's very important, though, is that we protect the rights of the vulnerable people that are enrolled in Medicaid programs or Medicaid replacement programs like 10 Care. I think we can do both.
We should point out this is a large program even today. About a fifth of the state budget each year goes into 10 Care. It is the largest single chunk of the state budget, I've read, and about one in five Tennesseans get their coverage through 10 Care. This is a wide-reaching program. Maybe even if you're not on Medicaid, you might know somebody who is. It has that kind of reach.
Yeah, I think actually it's even more complicated than that, Brandon. When we talk about the impact of Medicaid on our state, 25% of our general fund spending is on our 10 Care program. There's only one category that's larger. But we also have to recognize that 51% of the funds that come into the state from the federal government are related to Medicaid. So that's why I think our governor, along with other state governors, protested the idea of moving Medicaid from an entitlement program to a block grant program, because the impact on the state would be almost disastrous, because the specter of having to cut eligibility people, the people that are eligible even more, having to cut payments to providers even more, which were already at pretty bare bones, or having to cut benefits is not something that the governors relish doing. So we need to look at all aspects of the impact of Medicaid on our state budget. The other idea I'd like to share with you is Medicaid within our state budget operates within a system, and the cost that we might offset for Medicaid may pop up somewhere else. They're very interrelated. The other thing is if we have major changes in Medicaid, it's also going to affect the non-Medicaid aspects of healthcare coverage in our state. If more people are uninsured, it will have an impact on employer-based and other coverage. We operate in a system. It's an imperfect system. It doesn't function very well, but consider it like a balloon. If I push here, it's going to pop up somewhere else. So we need, and this the CBO scores, Brandon, bore that out, that as they calculated what the impact of the various changes that were being proposed during the summer, it wasn't just how many people would come off Medicaid. It was the downstream effects within the system. So I think that idea of a system applies to Medicaid as well as to our state budget. It's not just a slice of the pie that you can change and it doesn't change the rest of the pie.
Do people with TennCare coverage pay for the medical care they receive?
No. One of the important characteristics that define Medicaid and Medicare entitlement programs have to do with the costs that can be borne by the recipients. Medicaid recipients do not pay premiums for their care. We know from a lot of research that you have to think about the overall income level of the folks that are on Medicaid, and premiums often would eat up too large of a proportion of their annual budget. And the data has shown that people then forego having coverage. The other aspect of cost for which Medicaid recipients are rightly protected is during the plan year, what we call out-of-pocket cost. These are the costs you would pay for copays, deductibles, coinsurance, and Medicaid recipients are, by statute, protected from a certain amount of expenses. So people pay, but it is restricted, and it has to do with the special circumstances of income levels of the people who qualify for Medicaid.
Earlier in the conversation, we talked about TennCare as an entitlement program, which by definition is the kind that you don't budget in advance for, you pay for it later on. It's something you at day one, will not know how much it'll cost until you see the final figures at the end of the fiscal year. What are the factors that influence those costs? I mean, this may get us into the cost of pharmaceuticals, hospital care. What are some of the costs that affect how large a slice TennCare takes up?
Well, we could spend an hour on this, but I think very simply we need to look at three things. Who's eligible for coverage? So who's covered? What's covered? What are the benefits that are covered? And then the third thing we need to look at is how are those benefits paid for? And mostly that gets into payment to providers, physicians, nurse practitioners, other providers, hospitals, pharmaceuticals, etc. So if a state is faced with having to better manage or control their cost and they feel they need to do it through cuts and not through better management or creating efficiencies, they're going to go after one or more of those three categories. Who's covered, what's covered, and how is it paid for?
One of the politically controversial aspects of the Affordable Care Act was a mandatory expansion of Medicaid, lowering some of those barriers you and I were talking about, opening up eligibility to more people. The Supreme Court later came back and said, okay, it's not mandatory, it's optional. And I think the states are about half and half on that. Close to half have expanded Medicaid, some have not. Tennessee was one of those that did not. I just want to get into, very briefly, the benefit of a Medicaid expansion for a state and the drawbacks of Medicaid expansion.
Yeah, well, we have natural experiments going on, as you've said. 32 states across the country have expanded their Medicaid, and we're beginning to see the early data from that, and we're able to compare it to states like Tennessee that did not. And we know that, one, providing Medicaid is cheaper than paying for uncompensated care because those costs are felt throughout the system. We also know that providing care through Medicaid is about 25% cheaper than paying it through the private sector plans. So that's important. Well, there's reasons for that, though. Some of that has to do with lower provider payments. We also know, and we're beginning to see some really encouraging data about improved health outcomes. We can actually look at outcomes, hospitalizations that can be avoided, mortality, morbidity, and when people have coverage, those things are better. So that's very helpful. We're also looking at what we consider to be measures that contribute to those outcomes, preventative care, seeking primary care in a timely way, not postponing care, not waiting too long. So the data that's coming in from the states that did expand Medicaid looks good. We have our neighbor state, Kentucky, that we've done a lot of comparison to. And I think one of the other big areas, and again, it relates to uncompensated care, is those states that have expanded Medicaid have a lower rate of hospital closures. You know, we lead the country in the rate of hospital closures in Tennessee, and this has a line to uncompensated care. And it has to do with the fact that the way uncompensated care was paid for before the Affordable Care Act was taken out because the assumption was everyone would have Medicaid expansion. So those states that haven't expanded are really losing, and Tennessee is leading the pack.
But what about some of the drawbacks to Medicaid expansion? What are some of the areas in which it may not be as favorable for states?
Well, I think why don't we instead talk about what was said down at our state legislature about why not to do Medicaid expansion. And I think there was concerns about the cost for the Medicaid expansion was primarily borne by the federal government, but that would go down incrementally to the point where it became 90% pay, that's a pretty good deal, by the federal government, 10% by the state. What I heard down at in Nashville was, well, we don't know if the ACA is going to make it. You know, this sounds like when we get a new president, we're going to do away with it. Well, the ACA has survived Supreme Court challenges. The ACA is 7 years of repeal and replace efforts. So I think right now I would say to state legislators, let's take a look again at Medicaid expansion because it appears that it's here to stay. And I think the 10% cost that the state would eventually have to pay probably could be offset by the other factors that are not good for our state because people are getting care. They may not be getting it in a timely manner, but because of that, they may be getting it in a very inefficient and ineffective way.
You hinted at this just a moment ago, but as we continue to watch the political debates unfolding in Washington, Republicans appear to be split, maybe not evenly, but there are divisions and splits about whether or not they're going to continue to consider replacing the Affordable Care Act or a partial repeal or work with Democrats to try to fix the ACA. So there's a lot of uncertainty. What might we expect for TennCare as the Trump administration continues?
Okay, well, it is very hard right now. It's uncertain times, so if I get my crystal ball out, it's not real clear right now what's going to happen. Right now, because of the timing, most of the attention is focused on the exchanges. And then when we talk about Medicaid, it's interesting. After the major, major threats to Medicaid, we do have the two factions. We have some that say, we're coming back after healthcare. And then we have others that say, we lost that battle, we've got to move on to other things like tax reform, infrastructure, other things that need to be done. So I guess my word is to you, Brandon, is that it's uncertain what's going to happen. But I'm kind of encouraged that maybe we're going to have a better discussion. And I applaud all the people that let their views be known. I applaud the grassroots advocacy that was so dominant this summer that maybe we'll finally have that national conversation about what we want to do about healthcare.
Dr. Carol Myers is an associate professor in the University of Tennessee College of Nursing. And as always, Dr. Myers, a pleasure to talk with you.
Pleasure's all mine. Thank you.
And we want to hear from you, too. Tweet us at WUOTFM or send an email to newsroom@WUOT.org and use Health Connections as your subject line. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth.